You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Thursday afternoon. I am your host, Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is shut down, day 16, and let's remind ourselves yet again who's responsible here.
Who's going to bear the brunt of the responsibility if indeed there is a shutdown of our government?
Well, if you say who gets fired, it always has to be the top. I mean, problems start from the top, and they have to get solved from the top, and the president's the leader, and he's got to get everybody in a room, and he's got to lead. You know, the interesting thing is in 25 years and 50 years and 100 years from now, when the government is, you know, they talk about the government shutdown, they're going to be talking about the president of the United States. Who was the president at that time? Mm-hmm. They're not going to be talking who the head of the House was, the head of the Senate, who's running things in Washington. So I really think the pressure is on the president.
Yep, the pressure is on the president. That is who is responsible here. Some shutdown updates to start our Thursday afternoon. Senate Democrats have blocked an $852 billion defense appropriations bill in a 50-44 vote on Thursday. This just highlights the divisions and the fact that the MAGAs don't seem to want to be negotiating over much of anything. Don't worry, the Department of Defense is not running out of money anytime soon. This was largely symbolic. The vote will come up again and will absolutely pass once the government is funded again. But what I thought was interesting about this was the fact that, of course, Senate leader Republican John Thune said this is Democrats, you know, throwing national security under the bus. Again, that's garbage. But importantly today, yet another funding measure failed in the Senate by a 51-45 vote. Republicans, again, failing to pick up any additional Democrats, not getting anywhere closer to the 60-vote threshold that they need to hit. And Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said Thune hadn't presented a proposal for any kind of vote on extending these ACA credit subsidies that we've been talking about, the tax credit or subsidies that we've been talking about for weeks on end. Although, and here's the important part, Majority Leader Thune had promised Minority Leader Schumer that he would put together such a proposal for a vote on extending the credits in the Senate. So Thune says he's going to do something, fails to do it. Chuck Schumer and the Democrats call him out and say, hey, you got to do better here. We actually have to see a couple of proposals. There needs to actually be a negotiation instead of Republicans trying to basically bully Democrats into agreeing to strip health care from some 15 million Americans. This is stupid. Let's be clear. And House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries gave a few remarks this afternoon, speaking to the unity that Democrats have on this issue surrounding the shutdown and the stand that Democrats are taking over this one point, that Republicans, despite the fact that the big, brutal bill stripped away the ACA subsidies, Democrats are standing pat, that in order to get the government open again, Republicans are just going to have to do the gosh darn right thing. Take a listen to House Minority Leader Jeffries today.
From the very beginning of this crisis, Senate Democrats and House Democrats have made clear we are fighting to address the health care crisis that Republicans have created, the largest cut to Medicaid in American history as part of the Republican One Big Ugly Bill that hurts everyday Americans in order to benefit their billionaire donors with massive tax breaks. Hospitals, nursing homes, and community-based health centers are closing all across America because of Republican policies. That's hurting everyday Americans. Their refusal to extend the Affordable Care Act tax credits is going to result in tens of millions of people in Republican-held states, Democratic states, purple states, all across the country. It doesn't matter. Tens of millions of people are going to experience dramatically increased premiums, co-pays, and deductibles. It's going to make healthcare unaffordable for people. They will be unable to see their doctor or take their children to see a doctor when they need one. That's not acceptable in this country. This is the wealthiest country in the history of the world. So Democrats are standing up to address the cost of living crisis that Republican policies like the Trump tariffs have made worse. And we're standing up in defense of the health care of the American people.
Amen, Hakeem. Now, just a note, I may get to this a little later in the show. But what I found really interesting about this is that the racist memes and posts attacking Leader Jeffries, as well as the anti-Semitic posts attacking Minority Leader Schumer, have reached a fever pitch on social media. You would think after all of that faux outrage over rhetoric, you know, and incendiary language, that maybe Republicans and their supporters would tone down the bigotry and racism. Nope, not happening. Closer to home here in the state of Wisconsin, former chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, Ben Wickler, has announced he won't run for governor. He was an incredibly essential piece of what I think has been a fairly strong recent track record from Democrats in the state of Wisconsin of winning the big statewide elections. He was an incredible fundraiser to do that. But I think what Ben had to say, he was quoted in today's Journal Sentinel about what Democrats need to do going into 2026, is really the headline here. And it echoes many of the points I have been trying to make on this program over and over again. It echoes the discussion that I had yesterday with two professors in the 5 o'clock hour. If you missed that, you can find it at civicmedia.us/shows on Apple Pods or Spotify. Here's what former Wisconsin Dem Chair Wickler said. Democrats need to focus on showing Democrats should focus on showing voters how they can bring this state together in a time of bitter and intense division and actually make government work for everybody. Democrats need to build a defense for democracy and be clear about which of their candidates can actually win in general elections. Ha ha! That part right there. Democrats need to stop the litmus testing, stop the ideological purity tests. We cannot be defined in the public forum, and yes, I am a Democrat. We cannot be defined in the public forum by the tail ends of our bell curve. You know, those at the most extreme ends of the Democratic Party. That won't work for us. We've got to build a broad-reaching, broadly effective message focused on the economic needs of regular Wisconsinites and Americans writ large. And we need candidates that can win in the general election. I don't want to see yet another candidate who has only ever run in a royal blue legislative district. To me, you have not shown the ability to unify, to speak across the aisle, and to bring people of both parties together. We need practical, we need common sense, we need authentic, and we need solutions. I certainly hope that the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, under their new chair, heeds Mr. Wickler's warnings about 2026. I'll also call him my warnings, but hey, he's the one with the fancy job title. In other local news, the Milwaukee County Mitchell International Airport, the Dane County Regional Airport, and the Green Bay Austin Straubel International Airport have all said they're not going to be showing this propaganda piece from Kristi Noem. If you haven't seen the video, it's kind of like a weird talking version of a glamour shot. You remember those that they used to have in malls and people would go to get like boudoir shots for their partners, or maybe, you know, you'd go for like your senior picture or something and your hair would be all big and flowy and the makeup's, you know, huge and looks very CoverGirl-ish. Well, Ice Barbie in these videos looks a little bit like it was glamour shot day at the Department of Homeland Security. Let's take a listen to this ridiculous. And remember how we started the show today and how we're going to start the show every day until the shutdown ends. Donald Trump is responsible for this shutdown, but listen to Noem and what she wants airports across this country blasting into Americans' ears.
Hi, I'm Kristi Noem, the United States Secretary of Homeland Security. It is TSA's top priority to make sure that you have the most pleasant and efficient airport experience as possible while we keep you safe. However, Democrats in Congress refuse to fund the federal government. And because of this, many of our operations are impacted, and most of our TSA employees are working without pay. We will continue to do all that we can to avoid delays that will impact your travel. And our hope is that Democrats will soon recognize the importance of opening the government.
Wah, wah, wah. What we realize is the importance of accessible, good quality, and affordable health care. We can at least start with the affordable part-ish, sort of, and try to work on the accessible and high quality. But, you know, that requires cooperation or at least good faith negotiations with the other party. By the way, all of this is, of course, illegal. The Hatch Act prohibits using government equipment or official government channels for partisan political activity. There's literally a law that says she can't do this. And they're doing it anyway, continuing Donald Trump snubbing his nose at law and order and embracing, in a big old bear hug, utter and complete lawlessness. You know, kind of acting like someone who is accountable to no one, is blessed by the hand of God. Oh yeah, like a king. Like a king. Speaking of kings, I'm super excited because today at 5 o'clock, I'm going to be joined by Liam Kent of the Blue Anchor Project, one of the national partners of the No Kings Day activist protest, whatever you want to call them, rallies. I'm going to call them rallies that are going to be happening all across this fine country of ours on Saturday. In case you missed a little tidbit I dropped, I think about a week ago, yours truly, yes, me, Maggie Dawn, had been asked to MC the No Kings rally here in Milwaukee at Cathedral Square. I got promoted, y'all. I am now going to be the speaker on the rule of law, trying to share some of the most basic values that conservatives, Republicans, Democrats, independents, liberals, progressives, and folks that don't really give a whit about politics should all agree about. That there is no man above the law in this country, that we don't have kings, that no political leader has been chosen by God, but that we are ruled and governed not by one man's whims, but by a system of laws, that is what we have all signed up for as Americans, that's what democracy means. And I'll be speaking about how each of us can protect that value and ideal no matter which candidates we tend to vote for, no matter which party we tend to associate with. This is a call for all Americans, all true patriots, all that truly love our country to stand for the rule of law. I'll be there on Saturday in Cathedral Square. Mark Pocan's going to be at like 4 rallies across the state. We'll talk about No Kings more at 5 o'clock. Stay tuned. I've got more headlines coming up. Respect. Pentagon journalists walk out. Today, just a little while ago, thumbing their nose at Department of War Secretary Kegseth. We talk more about that when we come back right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Breaking news. Former National Security Advisor John Bolton, as we've been predicting on this program, has now been officially indicted by a federal grand jury in Maryland. The indictment says that Bolton kept more than 1,000 pages of diaries containing highly classified information and may have shared them with 2 relatives. Apparently, his email account was also hacked by Iran, exposing some of the secrets. I don't know why John Bolton would be responsible for Iran hacking his email, but interesting. All of this, pretty fascinating if you think about Keg's breath and the fact that he was zipping war plans around on his signal device to his wife and a couple of buddies that didn't have clearance to receive any of that information. I wonder when that indictment is dropping. Don't you? I mean, inquiring minds here. This is so deeply problematic. It comes merely a day after the fact that Donald Trump announced that he is going to overhaul the IRS to target left-leaning groups. Not the billionaires. You know, not the billionaires. Not Elon. I won't look at, like, Bezos or Zuckerberg or any of these other mega corporations like Amazon and Google or Peter Thiel. You know, the oligarchs, which you want to look at as left-leaning groups, however that might be defined. You know, those pesky nonprofits that worry about things like affordable housing and making sure people have enough food. Let's go after those folks. Sick the IRS on them. Truly, truly sad. Donald Trump also, if we're talking about weaponization, we've now got the indictment against Jim Comey. We've got the indictment against Letitia James, the Attorney General of New York. We've now got the John Bolton indictment. We expect one of Brennan, former CIA Director Brennan. It's going to go on and on and on. And yesterday, Donald Trump went to great lengths to be sure that he put out the next list of folks that he would like indicted. Maybe he'll send another DM to Pam Bondi, giving her a direct order to indict these people. Listen to Donald Trump, again, say his enemies list out loud. I'm sure Law Barbie Pam Bondi will get right on it. This is not the way that things are supposed to work, folks. Take a listen.
No, I just want people to act. They have to act. And we want to act fast. You know, they were ruthless and vicious. I was impeached twice. I was indicted 5 times. It turned out to be a fake deal. And we have to act fast. One way or the other. One way or the other. They're guilty. They're not guilty. We have to act fast. If they're not guilty, that's fine. If they are guilty or if they should be charged, they should be charged. And we have to do it now.
Act fast, which is basically like saying, Pam, go get the people to indict this list of folks that I'm ticked off about. And I'm not sure if that sound had it, but later in that same cut, he literally lists out Jack Smith, Lisa Monaco, Andrew Weissman, Adam Schiff. These are all people, including Jim Comey, who rightfully and legally investigated a variety of alleged crimes, including whose mishandling of classified documents? Everyone, wait, checks notes. Donald Trump's. You know the very thing that they're indicting John Bolton for? That's the Mar-a-Lago documents case. The ones that they literally Donald Trump had been begged to return for over a year and he still wasn't doing it. Yeah, that thing, the ones in the gilded gold bathroom. Now, I want you to listen to this next sound. This is Eric Trump lying about that investigation, doubling down on Donald Trump's weaponization of the DOJ to go after Jack Smith. Listen to this. This is Eric Trump 2 days ago.
Different than when they raided Mar-a-Lago. I talk a lot about that in the book because I was the guy that got the call from our teams. Obviously, I run the Trump organization. I got a call. The FBI is at the front gates of Mar-a-Lago. They have a search warrant, sir. And I go, why would they have a search warrant? What are they trying to search at Mar-a-Lago? I don't know, but they're demanding that you instantly turn off every security camera. Obviously, Mar-a-Lago is a commercial property, right? They're demanding you turn off your security cameras right now. And then, you know, sure enough, we find out that Jack Smith is planting manila folders on the office of my father, taking these, you know, glamorous photo shoots where he has them all fanned out like
let's
a turkey.
Shut this liar up. Shut this liar up. Okay, let's be clear here. There is evidence, both from deposition testimony as well as other records, that no one from the FBI directed that videotapes be stopped or deleted. No, that was Walt Nauta, the guy that was indicted alongside Donald Trump. Yeah, he's the one that went into their recording room and said, hey, delete this stuff and turn this off. And by the way, Jack Smith couldn't have planted these documents because Jack Smith wasn't hired until November 18th of 2022. And the raid on Mar-a-Lago happened on August 8th. So stop lying, Eric Trump. Stop lying, Donald Trump. I am so sick of it. This is so irresponsible. And where is FCC Chairman Brendan Carr getting super ticked off and threatening to yank FCC licenses because Eric Trump is lying on national news programs? Wait. We've got that sound. No, we don't. because it didn't happen. Truly, truly abhorrent. We deserve better. This isn't the way the DOJ was supposed to work, and to every conservative out there, but with Biden, blah, blah, blah. If it was bad then, why is it okay now? Huh? And by the way, those were legit investigations because they didn't conclude who had done crimes first and then try to pin them on them. They followed the facts and the law. There's a difference. We come back, we'll be joined by Devin Ombrez of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We talk about the Voting Rights Act under attack before the Supreme Court. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. If you're just joining us, this is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I've talked with this next guest before on this program. I always enjoy our chats. He's been very patient to get him back on the Maggie Dawn Show to talk about the beginning of this new Supreme Court term. It kicked off on October 6th, a mere 10 days ago. And there is a massive case that the court will be weighing in on in very short order that may, in effect, gut the central provisions of the Voting Rights Act. When you take this in context with the mid-decade gerrymandering being commandeered by our king, President Donald Trump, it spells portends a very, very dire future, not just for Democrats, but for Republicans as well. So with all of that as prequel, it is my privilege and honor to bring back to the show Devin Ombrez. He is the Senior Director for Courts and Legal Policy with the Center for American Progress Action Fund. He has an absolutely stellar resume. I'm not going to read all of it to you fine folks, but suffice it to say, he served as a senior counsel lawyer to Representative Jamie Raskin and helped Representative Raskin managed the portfolio of policy issues that were before the House Judiciary Committee. That was a real boring committee for a whole gamut of years. Of course, I joke. Welcome back to the show, Devin. We've got a lot of action in the Supreme Court this term, and it's starting out with a bang.
It is evergreen, and John Roberts' hatred for the VRA, which has been a through line of his career since he's been with the Reagan administration, is now his life's mission. Is coming to fruition when he has the opportunity to strike down Section 2 of the VRA, the last remaining bastion of the Voting Rights Act that protects minority voters across the country.
So this is this case called Louisiana v. Calais. Tell us what that case is about and how it may, again, render null, void, and no longer enforceable this second section of the Voting Rights Act.
Sure. And I'm sure you've talked to your audience a lot about the mid-decade redistricting.
Yes.
So after every decennial census, the states are supposed to redistrict. And Louisiana got 6 seats, and they drew a new map, and they have about 30% African American population in the state. They drew one majority minority district, one black district in the entire state, out of, even though 30% of the population is black. The Fifth Circuit, which is not known for being progressive by any means, said, y'all got to redraw.
I would say quite the opposite, right? The Fifth Circuit has been sort of the most Trumpian of circuits.
Yes.
But sorry for the interruption.
No.
Fifth Circuit even said no good.
The Fifth Circuit said, no, you're violating Section 2 of the VRA. You got to redraw the map. So they redrew and gerrymandered the heck out of it and drew a snake straight through the middle of Louisiana to create a second majority minority district, a second black district. And they did it in such a way as to protect Speaker Mike Johnson, Steve Scalise, a couple other of the white members from down there. And then the people who describe themselves as 3 non-African-American voters, which means white folks, decided that this was a violation of their voting rights, and it was a dilution of their voting rights, and so they challenged it. Court heard argument last year. For whatever reason, they couldn't come to a decision, and they resubmitted it for argument. But this time they said, please tell us whether Section 2 of the VRA violates the 14th and 15th Amendments, which are the Reconstruction Amendments, which were specifically brought into being for the purpose of protecting the newly freed slaves 160 years ago. The purpose of the amendments was to end discrimination against Black people, to provide some form of equality. And so now they're saying, wait, maybe the Voting Rights Act, which was enacted to enforce the 14th and 15th Amendments, is unconstitutional some way. It's really just turning the entire history and concept of originalism on its head, despite the fact that six members of the court claim to be originalists.
Yeah, it is truly shocking, as is what I'm going to call this complete inversion. And we see it in case after case, and frankly, in white grievance and fragility after white grievance and fragility, especially from the right. It's like, this is reverse racism. No, it's not. Black people are, minority folks are 30% of the population in the state of Louisiana. They gerrymandered the hell out of it to make sure that Black people only got one out of six seats or their preferred candidates. If it's inverted racial discrimination, what are you getting, like too many seats, like too much power?
It's so much a larger part of this anti-DEI movement that's pushing through the right. There was a case, Fearless Fund, out of the 11th Circuit in Atlanta, where they said that a Black woman-owned venture capital firm couldn't only provide funds to Black woman-owned companies, despite the fact that venture capital funding only goes to less than 2% of Black woman-owned companies. I think something like 90%+ goes to white-owned companies in venture capital firms. So that 2% apparently was discrimination. Same thing last year in Students for Fair Admissions, when they completely ended the concept of racial considerations in collegiate admissions. They said, we're not permitted to look at whether you are, you know, if whether our campuses can kind of mirror the makeup of the nation. They're not allowed to do that. They are completely doing it all in the concept of white people are being discriminated against, because when you've never had to face inequality, equity is persecution.
This is so baffling to me. Like, white and especially white rich people, right, you are controlling the vast amounts of productive capacity. You take down the vast amounts of wealth in this country. You take up the vast amount of seats in all of our Ivy League universities and colleges. You are the ones that have always had the greatest power, and someone else is saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't let the legacy of that dominating impact be what we have in perpetuity in this country, and that's reverse discrimination.
And that's the kicker of it all, because the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments were intended and passed to create a level playing field for everybody in the country, regardless of racial makeup. And throughout the South, throughout the Jim Crow, post-Reconstruction era, those were ignored completely. We saw in the 1960s an insurgence of people saying, we need to be treated as human beings. We are men. That's what their signs said. We are men. And there was a huge shift in the way that equality has been advanced over the course of the last 60 years. This is crazy. The law school that I went to had its first Black professor hired in 1990. All right. Yeah. That's an insane thing to me. And I come from the South. So at this point, what they're even doing is they're not even ignoring things. They are shifting the narrative to say that these things that were intended to create equality among all Americans and to end discrimination against minorities were actually supposed to be racially neutral. They were intended to be colorblind, and that is an absolute bastardization of every historical tenet that we know about the Civil War.
Yeah, again, all of these originalists are ignoring the precise purpose of this. It wasn't to create a faux concept of equality that only exists under the law, that has no relationship to the actual reality of how opportunities, access, wealth, power, influence are distributed here on Earth One.
On a similar bent, we can talk about originalism in the context of creating a kingly presidency by this Supreme Court in Trump v. U.S. when they said presidents are indeed above the law. Apparently, none of them have ever read the Declaration of Independence, which has the litany of abuses that we revolted against King George for. And Donald Trump has been speedrunning those abuses in the last 9
it's
months.
It's like he's got a punch list. Check.
Ticking them all off, you know, and we're coming real close to violations of the Third Amendment with you can't be forced to quarter soldiers in homes. So they're not making us, you know, living in D.C. There are some, I actually feel bad for these guys because they're away from their families and their work and everything. And and there's guys in battle rattle guarding the Mike's, the Jersey Mike's sub shop that I go to a couple times a week. And I always ask them, like, are they going to let you guys go home anytime soon? And they're like, we don't know. And they're not happy.
No,
they're not happy. They don't want to be doing this. But because we're living in a war zone in a city that I've lived in for 15 years and have never seen a crime occur, that's just the altered reality that we live in. I like that you call that Earth One.
Yeah, Earth One. You know, President Johnson said once something along the lines of, if you can convince the white man that he's better than the best colored man, he won't notice that you're picking his pocket. And so much that the distractionary nonsense around the anti-woke, which is like you are against the diversity that makes our country strong, you're against the equity that enables us to continue to be a superpower, and you're against the inclusion that we fought the Civil War to enshrine in a system of laws. That's what anti-wokeism is. And it occurs to me, as we've seen the Supreme Court consistently turn away from originalism when convenient, there is no through line that you can discern that is theoretically, from a legal analysis approach, consistent from case to case. It stands out in sharp relief when we look at whether we're talking about Fearless Fund, right, and the fact that despite the reality of venture capital money flowing almost exclusively, except for a razor thin amount, infinitesimally small percentages to black women, ignoring that reality and saying a black female run venture fund, which is private, by the way, she can't decide to exclusively fund other black female led startups. The Voting Rights Act case, which is now going to say that somehow white people deserve to have an over distribution of congressional seats, and the Harvard SFFA case, right, that says, no, we can't consider race amongst a collection of factors to ensure that our students have an Earth One experience that is reflective of the American population. And yet, when this very same Supreme Court looked at the removing of rights, not the conferral of a benefit through venture capital, right, through college admissions, through voting access, that conference of a benefit or this affirming of rights of historically disadvantaged and, you know, a population of people that were enslaved by white people, as soon as it comes to stripping away rights and taking people's rights away, then they said in the Alien Enemies Act case, yeah, you can absolutely look at race as a number of factors, which all are basically pretext for race. So they're saying, yes, you can racially discriminate to strip people of their Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendment rights, but you certainly can't do that to ensure that they have equal voting rights, access to capital, or education.
No. No, I want to add two things that you said.
I want you to hold those two things, Devin. Okay. We've got to squeeze in a few messages. This is going to be a really, really quick segue here, folks. Stay with us. We got Devin Ombrez of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We're talking about the Supreme Court's new term and basically the wholesale endorsement of the attack on black folks by the Supreme Court. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a great guest with us. I always have a blast when I get to talk with him. His name is Devin Ombrez. He is the Senior Director for Courts and Legal Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We're talking about the beginning of the Supreme Court's term. It started on October 6th, specifically the case Louisiana v. Calais, where the Supreme Court seems poised to void Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. This is yet another in a long now line of Supreme Court decisions under John Roberts where laws that were created in the Reconstruction or post-Reconstruction period following the Civil War to try to protect the rights of Black folks here in this country, this Supreme Court now seems especially hostile to. Right before we took a break, I mentioned to Devin the fact that if we look at the affirmative action college admissions case, if we look at the venture capital fearless fund case, if we look now at the voting rights case, what you see is the Supreme Court inverting reality, ignoring it completely, and saying these laws that were designed to ensure that Black folks had full participatory rights in our democracy, in our capitalistic system, these things that can maybe could be considered as conferring a benefit, those you, no. But Black folks, there's reverse racism now, and this just can't happen. But just a month and a half ago, this Supreme Court said, of course you consider race when you're stripping rights away from people. That's perfectly acceptable. You cannot make these things work together, ladies and gentlemen. You can't. And I'll also say this. When you're talking about stripping rights away, you're talking about some of the most fundamental constitutional rights in this democratic republic. There should be a higher standard for stripping them away. And yet again, Roberts et al., Not really digging on that. It's simply so inconsistent to shock the conscience if you're paying attention. Devin, you had a couple of thoughts.
One would think so. I did have a couple of thoughts. I think that you asked, is there a through line? And I think the through line is that it is all part of a piece of the anti-wokeness that is roiling the country, which I consider very anti-Christian. Like, yes. Anti-wokeness is anti-Christian. And you see folks on the right saying empathy and sympathy and caring for your fellow man is indeed a sin that you should not engage in, which, if I recall my Sunday school and CCD lessons, is the opposite of the gospel, but that's just me. You asked if there's a through line. There is a through line throughout all of it. It is a will to power and a willingness to let this administration get away with whatever they want. Black people can't have voting rights protections, but ICE and Homeland Security are permitted to engage in racial profiling. And we got rid of racial profiling about 60-ish years ago through a series of civil rights cases where the Supreme Court couldn't disallow that. And so what they're doing is overturning precedent left and right. And Thomas said last week or 2 weeks ago at a speech at the Catholic University, I'm not going to consider stare decisis. If I think that the issue is stupid, I'm just going to vote to overturn it, which is not how stare decisis has ever worked. Stare decisis meaning guiding light. We will follow this. If a prior court has said it, we're not going to overturn it unless facts and circumstances have substantially changed on the ground. And they have not. And here's the thing that to pull out.
And they have not. That's such a key point, Devin. Earth one, the circumstances have not. It's like they wave a magic wand in their big marble building in Washington, D.C. And it's like, oh, yeah, there's no disparities. There's nothing to see here.
So when John Roberts said in Shelby County versus Holder 10 years ago, when he struck down Section 4 of the VRA, which got rid of preclearance, he said the only way to stop being racially motivated is to stop being racially motivated. So let's just not have any enforcement mechanisms and trust on the goodwill of humanity to not engage in racially motivated actions. And as soon as they struck that down, you saw states pass hundreds of laws that significantly stripped voting power away from minority communities. And what you're going to see, and the thing that really concerns me about Calais versus or Louisiana versus Calais, is when this opinion comes down, because if it comes down in January, you are going to see every state in the South completely regerrymander their districts and get rid of basically the entirety of the Black caucus. They are going to redistrict 19 seats, which will make it a probable impossibility for people of color to gain seats, for you know, anything to change. And they're going to continue this gerrymandering crusade they've been on for decades at this point, where it's not constituents who get to pick their members. It is members who get to pick their constituents. And that is not a representative democracy. It's not.
Yeah, John Roberts, and this has been repeated in various cases, including SFFA versus Harvard, we have to get rid of racism by not talking about race. That is the equivalent of white people saying, I don't see race. That is garbage. It is utter garbage. We deal with disparate outcomes. We deal with the historical impacts of enslaving people. We deal with that by talking about race, with dealing with the actual realities of folks. And this concept that white people presumptively get all this stuff, and anything that tries to rebalance or provide more equal access and equal opportunity despite centuries of legally enshrined racism, is so asinine that it could only come from, let me see here, Alito, Robert. I mean, with the exception of Clarence Thomas, it has always been a group of old white dudes from Ivy League backgrounds. It's like, what, they don't live on Earth One with the rest of us.
We've only had women on the Supreme Court since the 1980s. Sandra Day O'Connor was the first.
Yes.
We've had five in the entire 250-year history of the U.S. I guess six. I'm not counting Barrett, but six. Yeah. We've only had six women on the Supreme Court in 250 years. It's nuts.
Again, Earth One, reality, folks, it should matter to our courts. We're going to have to say goodbye to Devin. Thank you so much to Devin Umbres, the Director of Courts and Legal Policy for the Center for American Progress Action Fund. He'll be back really soon, especially given all that is happening in our court system. When we come back, I'm going to be joined by Liam Kent. He's one of the national partners for No King's Day. We're going to talk about the ridiculous rhetoric from the right on that. Don't go anywhere.
Thanks.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.